slung. JB was hunched beside him, the Uzi ready to fire. He turned and winked at Ryan, the overhead light glinting off the lenses of his spectacles. They waited. Ryan swung around anxiously, but the sec door was locked. He crawled over, cursing himself for stupidly leaving the door untested, finding there was a simple triple bar sec lock that opened from their side. He turned back to cover, giving a thumbs up sign to the armorer. Their attackers were very cautious now that they knew that their approach had been detected. Ryan guessed they were probably into the part of the exhibition with a long table and the row of pyramids, meaning they'd appear any minute now. It wasn't surprising that they were being so careful, knowing the weight of firepower that the Outlanders could lay down against them. Ryan peeked around the corner of the table, seeing that Ephraim was leading a hesitant move into the room where some of the doors now swung open. The man was ignoring the section of the gallery where Ryan and JB were hiding, convinced that they'd taken cover behind the doors. He had five men gathered behind him, and he glanced back, pointing at the doors.
Now!
His men charged at them. It was like taking candy from a blind child. Ryan aimed his stire as JB steadied his Uzi. Blood sprayed over the cement floor as the few survivors of the opening blast fought to turn and retreat. Out the back now. Ryan slung the stire onto his shoulder and sprinted for the door. He glanced outside. He could make out a narrow path fringed with overgrown ornamental bushes. The shot had come from behind the cover, and a cloud of black powder smoke still hung in the afternoon air. Ryan stuck the Sig Sauer around the edge of the door, aiming at the center of the cloud. He risked another look and saw the body of a young man roll out onto the path, blood streaking from two wounds, one in the groin, the other high in the chest. His Kentucky musket was still clutched in his right hand.
Let's go.
The youth had obviously been placed there as a last resort stopper to try to prevent the Outlanders from making a break out the back. As Ryan darted out and sprinted to his right, away from the center of the bill, toward a narrow draw, there was no more shooting. The massacre inside had taken away all enthusiasm for pursuit, and nobody came after them. Ryan slithered down the rocky side of the draw. JB was only moments behind him, taking up a defensive position, staring behind them toward the squat shape of the Burgess Gallery.
Looks like we kicked the balls out of them, stoops.
It was our blasters they wanted. Saw it in their greedy little dirt-poor eyes. We best get going. No point staying around here. Head north.
They followed the ravine, as it snaked in roughly the direction they wanted, toward the distant fortress of the Magus and Gert Wolfram. The highway dog-legged to the left, away west, leaving only a faint hunting trail to keep them heading in the direction they wanted. There was a large campsite near a shallow, clear pool. Ryan scuffed his boot through a pile of ashes, turning up the rusted relic of an old Randall knife. Bone hilt burned away, long blade still keen-edged.
Map shows we're getting close to the section of the forest where they laid mines and traps.
Ryan rubbed the steel with his finger, revealing the initials GC.
Big fire. Think it could be stickies?
Could be.
Ryan sat on a fallen log and stared at the calm pool, watching a foot-long dragonfly, colored a brilliant turquoise, darting back and forth.
Wonder how the others are getting on.
JB pushed back the brim of his fedora, blinking at the shafts of bright sunlight that speared through the overhanging branches.
Got to hope they're fine.
Ryan glanced up at the sky, calculating time and distance and light.
We'll find a place for the night in about 3 more hours. Reckon that should put us something like halfway to their ville. All going well, we could wreck late afternoon. Go in and try to rescue them sometime during the night.
They'll be looking for us. No way of walking around that.
Just like old times. We give it our best shot. Let's get a move on.
The day after capturing Ryan's friends, Wolfram and the Magus explained their plan. The fat man sat back in his winged chair in his private quarters, his hands folded across his capacious stomach. A balloon glass of good brandy was at his elbow, and a box of sugary-scented Turkish delight rested on a small table for him to pick at, as he stared across the room at Mildred, Jack, Doc, and Christy. The fortress was one of the most heavily defended places that Christie had ever seen, surrounded by sec fences and moats and walls. The watchtowers and the power plants operated from water turbines from a wide stream that coursed through the site. They had been imprisoned in two huts, men in one, women in the other. Thankfully, they had obviously been used for guards rather than for the sticky slaves. Each had 8 beds, a shower, bathroom, and kitchen unit. However, the companions were locked away, allowed out only to meet with their captors, until Ryan and JB turned up dutifully to carry out the work of setting up the mines and plantations again.
And after this, you let us all go free. All of us?
You have my word of honor upon it, my dear Dr. Wyeth. They bring back our ill-advised workers and set us up and running once more. And then you all are as free as air.
I fear that I would rather trust a rabid coyote. You and the monster with the metal eyes are notorious throughout the length and breadth of Deathlands for your cunning and evil, for your lies and your butchery. And you admit to this grudge against Ryan and John Dix.
The Magus was sitting cross-legged on a long sofa beneath a window. He pointed a metallic finger at Doc.
The best way of stopping that tongue from wandering and upsetting folks is to slice it out at the roots, Dr. Tanner.
Big talk, you freak.
The Magus looked for a moment as though he were going to attack the albino teenager. Then he relaxed back on his seat, smiling mirthlessly.
Look who's talking. A part of me hopes so much that the armorer and the one-eyed horse-son will fail in their task. They will so enjoy supping at the cold bowl of revenge.
All you're fit for.
Let us not have ill talking. This will be resolved one way or the other very shortly. We expect Ryan and John to have been landed last afternoon. They will have made some progress and camped for the night, not wishing to risk traveling through an alien and sticky-infested forest in the dead of darkness.
You truly make me wish to vomit, gentlemen. You take 2 women and a lad and an old man prisoner and use them as bait to try to destroy 2 of the bravest, finest men I have ever had the privilege of meeting. It is simply contemptible behavior.
The Magus rose at that and moved to stand by Doc.
You have no comprehension, you old fool. This is not some game with rules and honor. They'd act no differently.
You talk about honor? I don't believe you could begin to understand the word. Ryan and John Barrymore have courage. Grace under pressure, someone once called it years ago.
Please, Dr. Tanner. This can be done without acrimony, without standing on ceremony. We believe that they will try a rescue, which will fail. If there is no loss of life, they will then submit to our wishes. We have faith in their ability, unless the passing years have taken the edge from their ruthless combat skills. They will defeat the recalcitrant Stickies and drive them whimpering back to us. And all will be as well can be.
Jack's hand was inching toward the small of his back, where Christie knew he still had one of his throwing knives concealed, and she tensed herself, ready for violence. But the teenager changed his mind and relaxed. Ryan and JB had been making good progress, tracking along the winding maze of narrow trails that cut in all directions through the coniferous forest. Each time the path forked, they simply took the route nearest to north, using the mossy sides of the trees to keep their bearings. There had been no sign of two-legged life, though Ryan thought at one point that he caught the scent of a fire burning, but the wind had shifted westerly and the smell disappeared. There had been some signs of game in the soft patches of the trails, but both men agreed that to risk shooting at anything would be too dangerous. The threat from Stickies in the neighborhood was too great. It was mid-afternoon when they came across the 3 corpses. The shadowy clearing contained the lichen-covered remains of what might have been a hunting lodge. The roof was long caved in and gone, as were most of the walls, leaving only some of the thick, roughly carved main upright beams and cross timbers that had divided the rooms. It was these uprights and horizontals that the Stickies had used as a frame for their sporting. Some of the time, the Muties would indulge their extreme love for torture by fire, by totally immersing their victims in flames, often spicing it with stolen blasting powder, or even, if possible, Plasex. But here they'd taken their time and used the fire in a slower, more subtle and delicate way. The armorer studied the